Ames, what the hell is going on here? Barked Commander Arbiter as he trotted onto the field. More! Where's more? Jean waved his hand to catch the colonel's eye. Actually, nothing's going on, Commander. We were arguing a call and decided to settle it with a wrestling match, what with the war being over and all, sir. Several of the American players lowered their eyes and looked away. Many of the Germans did the same. Arbiter wasn't a complete fool, but he didn't press the matter. Okay, the ball game is over. He turned toward the guards. Get these Jerrys back into that pen, and if they so much as look at you funny, you have my permission to drill one as an example. Mueller quickly translated for the men who did not speak English, while the guards herded the prisoners toward the gate to the compound. Mueller caught Jean's eye and nodded briefly as if to thank him. What got into them? Ray asked. Probably the same thing that would get into us if we were in their shoes, Jean replied. We were celebrating the loss of their country and maybe even the death of many of their family and friends. He bent down to pick up his mitt and started walking toward the pen. Damn thoughtless of us, he muttered. More! It was Commander Arbiter. Jean stopped and turned. Where do you think you're going? Get over here. Yes, sir, answered Jean, walking to where the commander was standing and saluting. Now what the hell really happened? We started celebrating the news of the end of the war. They don't know about their homes or families. I guess we forgot about them standing there listening, that's all. More, don't go native on me, Commander Arbiter shot back. I don't give a rat's ass about their feelings or their families. As I've told you over and over, they are the enemy, and not as of today, sir. Arbiter's eyes bulged, and he looked like he was going to explode. Damn it, More! Don't you ever interrupt me again! Am I making myself crystal clear? Stunned, Jean swallowed hard and nodded. Answer me now, or I will have you arrested. Jean stood there, unable to say a word. The American team gathered around him. The commander looked at Ray Laws, who stared back without saying a word. More? Laws? In my office, now. Arbiter stormed off. When he was out of earshot, Ray asked, Do you think he meant right now, Jean? Or do we have time for a cup of coffee? The entire team fought, largely without success, to stifle their laughter. Luckily, the commander was already out of earshot. Jean shot a look at Mac, who fumbled his way through an apology. The catcher shook his head and waved him off. Forget it, Mac. Just forget it. Do you think he's calmed down, Jean? Ray asked during the walk to Arbiter's office. Who knows, he answered. I've never seen him so worked up, but he's a reasonable man. Ray shot him a look as if he's lost his mind, but Jean ignored him and knocked on the door. Commander Arbiter, sir? More and Laws reporting as ordered. Come in and have a seat. Arbiter's voice was calmer. His tone measured, but it was obvious he was still steamed. Both players took a seat while Arbiter remained standing near the window looking outside. An uncomfortable silence followed. The officer finally cleared his throat and began speaking. I took a big chance on this baseball thing, Moore, and as I've told you, it was not the fiasco I thought it might be, so you can imagine my surprise when I look out my window this afternoon and see what others might view as a prison revolt. The commander turned and looked long and hard at both men. This is not the way I want to end my career, he yelled. The commander walked to his desk. One of his massive forearms pushed aside a stack of papers and two empty bottles so there was room for him to sit down on the corner. A full minute passed before he spoke again. You know, Moore, overall, this has been a great experiment. I doubted it in the beginning, but you made a believer out of me. Except for today, there hasn't been a single problem. Not one. No fights, no escape attempts, no sharing of unauthorized information, at least nothing I heard about. He paused before adding, A few months ago I almost shut the whole program down. The ballplayers looked in surprise at the commander. Why? They asked together. Either of you ever heard of Papago Park, outside Phoenix, Arizona? The sailors looked at one another and shook their heads. Large POW pen for krauts. They wanted to play volleyball and got the tools to do it. Bunch of bleeding hearts there, too, I guess. He cleared his throat and continued. Can you guess what they did with the tools? Tried to escape, guess Ray? Now that's a shock, isn't it? Shot back Arbiter, his eyes wide in mock surprise. They dug a 178-foot tunnel under the volleyball field. More than 24 slipped free just before Christmas. Most were recaptured within a few weeks. Can you guess who their leaders were? Ray and Jane shook their heads. U-boat men. Arbiter watched for their reactions. Ray looked over at Jean and raised his eyebrows. Jean ignored him. When will they be leaving, sir? He asked. Who? Your German players? Arbiter scratched his head and then shook it. I don't know. I'm sure there are many details to be worked out. If they don't close the camp and transfer them, they could all be here months. Maybe longer, who knows? The brass doesn't consult me on these things. Arbiter looked lost in his thoughts. Another 20 seconds of uncomfortable silence followed. Jean and Ray looked at each other, not knowing whether they should say anything. Finally, Jean broke the silence. Sir? No more baseball. Jean and Ray turned to look at one another. Commander, did you say no more baseball? Jean asked. Arbiter nodded. I'd say baseball is over, wouldn't you? There's no reason to keep playing now that the war in Europe is ended. They will probably be shipping out soon, or you guys might be. Have you given any thought that all of us might be headed for the Pacific soon? Jean thought fast, trying to come up with a reason to continue playing. With all respect, Commander, I think there is a reason to keep playing. The catcher was buying time. He had no idea what to say next. And what would that be, other than you want to play baseball? Flustered, Jean paused and looked at Ray. Yes, of course, sir. There is every reason to keep playing, Ray chimed in, looking back at Jean for an answer. Sir, as you said, this has been good, and because it's been good, Jean looked back at Ray. As Jean was saying, sir, as good as all this has been, we thought it would be good to end with the friendship game, interjected Jean, whose smile and nodding was completely at odds with what he was feeling. Where did I come up with that? He wondered. The friendship game? Arbiter narrowed his eyes as if he smelled a rat. Why haven't I heard of that? Jean stood up with excitement, but then remembered where he was. Sorry, sir. The friendship game is something we have been planning for just this occasion, Commander. Sit down more. Yes, sir, Commander, answered Jean, dropping back into his seat. Now fill me in what you have in mind. Arbiter sat down in his own chair and began hunting for his pack of lucky strikes. Commander Arbiter had informed his superiors that baseball was being played in the Louisiana POW camp. The initial reaction was disbelief, followed by anger. Eventually, the brass warmed to the idea, especially because someone like Commander Arbiter strongly endorsed it. That was something neither Jean nor his teammates ever learned. When the rest of the camp found out about the American-German friendship game, the idea took root and everyone looked forward to the event. All Jean had to do was sell Heinrich and his teammates on the idea. To his surprise, it was much easier than expected. The game was scheduled for August 8, 1945. The news was that after the game, Mueller, Kals, Gobler, and the rest of the Germans from the U-505 would be transferred elsewhere. Some said they were going to a camp in Canada. Others claimed their destination was England, where they would be put to work cleaning up the ravages of war. When they would return to Germany was a question no one could answer. Chapter 23, The Friendship Game.
The simultaneous advance of the American and British forces from the west and Russians from the east closed a death-like vice grip on the German Third Reich. How the war would end was largely decided in early 1945 at the Yalta Conference, where President Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and Joseph Stalin agreed on terms that would change the world forever. Poland, Hungary, the small Baltic states, and Romania would be governed by the Soviets. Others, like Yugoslavia, Austria, and Greece, would be divided between the Big Three. Additional countries directly affected by the Second World War, France, Holland, Denmark, Luxembourg, Belgium, and Norway, would remain under Western, American, and British control. Germany itself would be occupied by American, British, Soviet, and French troops, as would Berlin itself. These decisions seemed wise at the time, but were really a recipe for future conflicts that also voluntarily stripped freedom away from tens of millions of people for two generations. With the war winding down, the Germans became increasingly anxious to surrender to American or British troops, knowing that capture by Russian forces meant either a death penalty or long-term captivity. Hundreds of thousands of Wehrmacht troops surrendered en masse in April and early May. During the deep Allied advance, evidence of horrific German war crimes became apparent when concentration camps were discovered. The barbaric treatment of the Jews and others in these camps shocked even the hardened Russians, who thought they had seen it all in a lifetime of hardship. After General Eisenhower walked through the camp at Ohrdruf, he wisely ordered every German civilian in the immediate vicinity to do the same, so no one could later deny what had taken place right under their noses. Hitler selected Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz, the head of the German U-boat war, to act as the next Führer, and then killed himself in his underground bunker in Berlin. Dönitz did what he could to get hundreds of thousands of refugees west and away from Soviet forces before signing the surrender documents on May 7. Others surrendered to the Soviets the following day. VE Day, Victory in Europe, was officially proclaimed on May 8. Many high-ranking German officers like Hermann Göring, Albert Speer, Alfred Jodl, and Wilhelm Keitel were captured and eventually tried for war crimes. Many were eventually hanged. The war in Europe was over, but the World War was not. On the other side of the world in the Pacific theater, many hundreds of thousands would be killed and wounded over the next few months as the Japanese continued to wage a bitter defensive struggle to the death.
Gene and his teammates were always excited any time they put on their cleats, but playing Heinrich Müller and his fellow prisoners was not much of a challenge. Müller was a great natural athlete, but new to the game and thus unaware of its intricate complexities. The skill level of the rest of the Germans varied considerably. Simply put, they did not have the experience or sense of the game to put up much of a battle. Müller's rules of engagement made the game interesting and even more fun, but it never really put the Germans in a position to beat the American team. The U.S. Navy baseball team was set to play the German prisoner team in front of all the other prisoners from the entire Camp Rustin, as well as most of the servicemen and women from the area and local townspeople. It was being billed locally as the Friendship Game. The war was over, the German prisoners would soon be leaving for somewhere, and this was the last time they would play baseball together. Gene knew that most people would enjoy seeing the game, but until it was ready to begin, he had no idea so many people would place so much significance on it. They had been playing with the Germans in Louisiana for the better part of a year, except for the first game or two, when Commander Arbeiter would attend to try to find a reason to shut it down, it had never been a big deal. A dozen people would show up, mostly other off-duty guards or a few local area residents. That was it. All Gene knew was that he was going to play a game and a crowd was expected, so he wanted to be at his very best. The moment of the big event, he was standing at the foot of his bunk getting dressed when a familiar voice spoke from behind him. "Well, if it's not Cesar's favorite son, the pride of the Egyptians." Gene spun around and dropped his mouth in astonishment. "Mr. Boudreau, how are you?" He could barely contain himself as he shook hands with the man who signed him to play baseball. "I'm doing fine, Gene. Please call me Frank." The scout looked the star catcher over from head to toe. "I didn't think you could get any taller, but you added an inch or two since I saw you last. What, 4 years ago now? How are you, Gene?" "Yes, sir, I think it has been 4 years. Well, the war's over and I'm still playing baseball. I'd say all in all I'm doing just fine." Gene could not wipe the grin from his face. Neither could Frank. "Gene, I have been talking with Commander Arbeiter about how you and the boys are playing ball with the enemy. I heard this whole thing was your idea." Gene's broad smile turned into a sheepish grin. "Well, I don't know. It just evolved out of an idea to keep our own skills as sharp as possible, that's all. It's no big deal, really." Frank nodded and grinned back. "I always said you are a sharp kid. Sorry, you're not a kid anymore. I'll let you finish getting ready and you can tell me more about what it's like to play against the Germans. Any good prospects out there I should keep my eye on?" Both men laughed at the suggestion. "It's good to see you, Gene." "It's good to see you too, Mr. Boudreau. I mean, Frank." "So you'll be around after the game?" Frank nodded. "I've already talked with the commander and he said we can have dinner together off base if you'd like. My treat, of course. They still don't pay you enough for me to expect you to pick up the tab, but I have a hunch you'll be buying me dinner soon enough." When Frank arrived at the Camp Rustin ball field, he was amazed to find a sizable crowd of people had gathered to see a local baseball game. From what he could tell, people were still arriving, parking long distances away and walking in with picnic baskets and kids on their shoulders. Some even brought their family dogs. The Brooklyn Dodgers scout took a seat behind the American bench on some scaffolding set up for the occasion. He didn't expect much, but the Friendship Game was obviously a local event not to be missed. When the game was ready to begin, Commander Arbeiter walked onto the field and introduced the umpire for the game. The ump explained the unusual rules, the same rules of engagement Heinrich Müller had outlined months before. Jean got a kick out of watching the expressions of the people in the crowd when they realized how unfavorable they were to the American team. None of them seemed to realize that many of the Navy sailors were getting ready for a career in the big leagues. When the umpire was done explaining the game to the fans, Arbeiter signaled to a young sailor standing near third base. He walked slowly onto the field, carrying a trumpet under his arm, and stopped between the pitching rubber and the second base, where he lifted the shiny instrument to his lips and began playing the national anthem. While the anthem was being played, Gene looked down the line of his teammates. Each was standing proudly with his cap held over his heart, lined up along the third baseline. Gene thought for a moment about Buck and hoped that wherever he was safe. If only he could see us now, Gene dreamed wistfully. His mind drifted to Ward and then to his mom and dad, other siblings, and finally to Ron Collet. He wished they could all be here to see this. As the anthem was nearing the end, Gene shot a look across the field to Müller and his German teammates lined up along the first baseline. It was hard to read their mostly stoic expressions, although one or two looked angry, or at least that's what it seemed like to Gene. Maybe it was just sadness of how everything had ended. As the final notes blew, Gene could not help but think about how much he had grown to like some of the Germans. Together, they had made life in Louisiana not just bearable, but fun. He knew them well enough now to know that if they had grown up in the same town, they would have been good friends. "Play ball!" yelled the umpire. The crowd erupted in cheers. As the team trotted back to the respective benches, an electric pulse seemed to be heavy in the air. Everyone was excited and ready to play ball. Although energized, the Germans were also a bit intimidated by the crowd. Several were visibly nervous. Gene made a beeline for Müller, and the pair shook hands firmly. "It's been my honor to get to know you, Heinrich. Have fun, and we'll celebrate after the game." The German nodded his appreciation for the kind words. Gene trotted back to his bench and heard him shout back, "Thank you, Gene Moore. It is my honor also." As the visiting team, the Germans were up to bat first. After Ray Laws threw his last warm-up pitch, Gene lifted his mask and trotted to the mound. "Ray, I have an idea. Let's let them get a few hits. Let them play with us a bit, you know, make a game out of it for them and the crowd." Ray shrugged and replied, "Sure thing, boss." He took off his glove and began rubbing the shine off the ball. Martin Ackermann was the first batter. Ackermann played second base for the German team and was by far the shortest man on the team. Under the rules of this game, this was especially significant because a German could take his base on only two balls. Ackermann's diminutive stature decreased the size of the strike zone. Gene called for the first pitch, and Ray sent it off, slower and higher than normal. Martin swung hard and missed. "Strike one!" shouted the umpire. "Wait for your pitch, Martin," Gene coached. "Release, and don't take whatever he gives you. Be patient. Patient batters tend to get on base." Gene laughed as he threw the ball back to Ray. Ackermann didn't understand a word of English and so had no idea what the catcher had just told him. The German shot Gene a strange look but politely acknowledged his comments with a nod of the head. The second pitch came in high for a ball. This time, Martin didn't swing. "Ball!" shouted the umpire. The batter turned to Gene and smiled. "Way to go, Martin. Wait for your pitch." Ray stepped off the mound and looked over at Mac. "Whose side do you think Gene's on?" he asked with a grin. The entire infield broke out in laughter. Ray stepped back onto the mound, took the sign from Gene, and sent the ball hard and low over the plate. "Ball two," the ump yelled. "German rules of engagement, batter takes his base." As Ackermann trotted to the base, he thumbed his nose at Ray and looked back at Gene for approval. The catcher burst out laughing. Ray glared at the German and turned toward home plate. "Hey, ump," he yelled, "I think our catcher's on the wrong side. Kick him in the backside and remind him he's with the Stars and Stripes, would ya?" The ump pretended he didn't hear Ray, but he did lean in and ask quietly, "Whose side are you on today, Gene?" "I'm on baseball side today, ump," answered the catcher. "You know these guys can't beat us. What's wrong with putting on a show for the folks and letting these Germans earn some of their dignity back?" The ump just shook his head at the thought and yelled, "Let's keep the game going. Next batter." The second batter was Rudolf Steinhardt, the German third baseman. When he connected with the ball, it usually sailed deep into the outfield. Steinhardt was one of the Germans who really enjoyed the game, and he was a natural athlete with a tremendous swing, but he also liked to pretend he hated everything about American baseball. "Okay, Steinhardt," Gene said, "show us what you've got." Gene liked to use the opposing players' first names, but Steinhardt seemed a better fit for the third baseman. As usual, Steinhardt completely ignored Gene, glared at Ray, and stepped into the batter's box. Gene set his glove for a low and outside pitch. Steinhardt swung so hard he missed and fell down. The crowd roared with laughter as the umpire called out the strike and the German jumped to his feet, angry and embarrassed. "Nice swing, Steiny," Gene joked as he threw the ball back to Ray. But that ball was about 2 feet outside the strike zone. Wait for it. Steinhardt understood some English, but there was no way he was going to acknowledge the catcher's remarks.